Recovery since Philip, Monumental African Methodist Episcopal Church. What you have just heard from William B. Jackson, I humbly accept as being my reward for one who chose not to leave Savannah, but to make whatever humble contribution I have to make of my world. And I would hope that every boy and girl and man and woman realize that this is one of the great settlements of black folk in America, and that the measurement of our race, our lot, will depend on how well we achieve, not at home, but right here.
Yeah.
African and Methodist Episcopal Church in the United States was practically limited to the region outside slave territory. Although Richard Adams started in Philadelphia in 1787, it was not safe to think about holding that revolutionary, that militant black church in Georgia. And it could not happen until freedom.
Yeah.
I look at you, I realize that your birth, your beginning, is with Lincoln's emancipation. It's with the march of General Sherman from Atlanta to the sea. That is your beginning. You are a church that in Georgia began with the freedom of black folk from the chains of slavery. I'm going to talk for a little while, I hope. I'd rather much have Malik be here than I and not listen to him. If I had to choose the subject, I've been around church long enough to know that preachers always go to the Bible, and I think I would be in Timothy today. And I would either take that portion of scripture that says, study to show thyself approved unto God. Or else I have trouble just settling on one piece of scripture, the whole Bible. And I don't go to what version was that you used, children? I'm still in the King James. I like a sweet Jesus. Ye shall know the truth. Always when I start thinking about my religion, I think about the experiences that my folk have faced in song, and perhaps I would therefore end up by laying aside Timothy and saying, Lord, I'm climbing high mountains trying to get home. And you know, I want you to know that I'm not of that school of thought who believes that the Negro youth was completely terrestrial. I think that he was actually talking about a whole in glory. Yes, if he could have the things of this world, he would accept it. But even they would not blur his youth to his ultimate arrival at the throne of grace. So, climbing high mountains, Lord, trying to get home. And you know, I stand here at this pulpit, I realize that only two black pastors stood here in this mountain. They are the Reverend Frederick Douglass Jadar, this young man, Frank C. Matthews. I want you to know that all of us heard old Reverend Jadar on a great day, because he was one of the stalwarts of ADACP in the times of the 60s when we were being hit by all sides, on every leading side. I don't know whether you know it or not, but we came through something in the freedom, the NAACP freedom struggle in this community. Because when things are going well and it looks like you're going to succeed or get some praise or have some achievements, everybody got to stop and take a part of whatever success is going to come, whatever glory that is, whatever day is it, everybody get in on the bandwagon. And we have all kinds of stop. I want you to know that during the large part of the 60s, I was president, Reverend Don first vice president. And there were many a time when I could not get to the preacher. Reverend Don got to me and told them in line. He said, no, no, brother, we ain't going to do that. It was he who oftentimes in the ship robbery and looked like it might be pulled away from its course. Because we couldn't have gotten nowhere now without the church. He, more than any of us, kept the church where it ought to be. I want you to know that when our kids got ready to march off, just a handful of them, into integrated schools for the first time in their lives, he who would meet them, the old YMCA building, early in the morning before we carried them off to school, and would pray with them. And it would be there when we would return them from the school in the evening. And again, pray. Oh, if we have young people who were not afraid, to a large extent, I'm sure, those prayers and the encouragement of that need to know, Paul, they ended along with the encouragement of that for the talk for a little while, of some of the great heroes of past, because I am one of those people who is extremely troubled. Look at these pictures, you would feel almost that whatever we've done, that we had no reason to cry out 50 or 60 years ago. I think you've got to watch out, because to me, the greatest men Byron Lord that took grace and produced were men who came out of the faith experience. Or men who knew what it was for themselves to be slaves. I'm going to call for one or two of them. I'm not going to talk about that blacksmith man who came out of St. George Church. Well, you talk about him all the time. Very bishop of this church. But I would like to talk, in my estimation, about another man who is impact on the race transcends the contribution that he made to get African countries. Because when we talk about their lives, you will see that we don't do ourselves justice when we just talk about the final achievement of our great men. But their greatness often came, in my estimation, from the depth in which they began. See if I make myself clear. Daniel 18, son of this church. Born in Charleston, South Carolina, for three parents. A lad boy. Three parents. But who likewise being born in Charleston, and although free, didn't have too much more than those blacks who were born slaves. Funny thing about it, you know, a lot of folks don't realize this. I see people going out on the hill, getting the biggest house that they can. No longer want to stay back here, you know, for the rest of us. The dirt and the muck in my eyes. But I don't care where you go. As long as I'm down here in the dirt and the muck, they know from whence you came, and they will do everything possible to make you just like the others. You don't get away from nothing until I get away from you. So Daniel was there in Charleston. No school for the black Negro or the free Negro. And he began way back there and started a preschool and conducted it as long as he could. But the real beauty of the Daniel 3 story is how he got his education. Self-taught man who read everything he could put his hands on. He took his food money and saved it as high school. Who took his time when he was not working and read by the fire in an open fireplace. And he even sought out the white scholars of Charles and inquired of them the information that he could not teach himself. possible as long as it's safe to do so. You know it and I know it. It's self-taught. I'm a fine and the greatest man to ever do. The man more than any other. Perhaps shaped our course and our interest in education. The fact is you emphasize the training of your ministry. Come as a legacy from Daniel's name. But you know the beauty of the man was that as he rose as a preacher in his church, one of your annual conferences, you elected him bishop. Daniel refused to say, I'm not worthy. Pastor Madison, scholar, he has to tell me whether anybody else thinks the bishop is that much to you, but I think not. On that first ballot, he refused, and it was after much persuasion. He said, no, I'm not worthy. It was after much persuasion that he finally accepted the exalted position as leader in your church. And I dare say that few under the sound of my voice know that the bishop Daniel A. King was the first Negro the head of college in the United States. The Wilberforce was not the first rule necessary, but all of the other institutions of higher learning of that day, up until Daniel King, were headed by white men. He was the first college president. And all of us here are from him that Daniel King was the first black president. There's another man who came out of this church also out of Charleston. He was black, kind of peachy. And the stories were passed around that even after he became bishop, and in his Brooklyn Charleston dialect, there were those like the snicker behind his back, because he kind of colored the King's English in the flavor of his corrupt African speech. Morris Brown. Great man of courage, who came on the scene during the days of Denmark Vesey and Gullah Jack. Gullah Jack and Denmark Vesey, I know that he won't tell me that they eventually gave the church of the Charleston to plan the insurrection against white folks and against slavery, did he not? Well, anyhow, Margaret Brown had nothing to do with it. But nevertheless, because of the plan created by Vichy and this unsuccessful insurrection, suppressed the state and the city, suppressed every effort on the part of black citizens, and as a result, the church was closed down. This stubborn Horace Brown continued to preach. And I want you to know that this was a double difficulty, because Negroes in Charleston had been members of the white Baptist church prior to the gathering of Morris Brown in Charleston under the A.D. Act. And many of these folks didn't want to lose their black members. They didn't necessarily want to approach the community base at the same time, but they didn't want that loss of memory. And so all kinds of obstacles were placed in the way, and things were made difficult for them. And Morris Brown was punished repeatedly for continuing to hold the meetings of the African society. For the color of the sundown, he would give a tiger mouth to the meeting, and would take them to his open fireplace in his one-room cabin. And he would light them like a knot. And he would take his one book, and he would lay it on his back in order for the light to reflect on the page. And he would lay there half the night, learning to read and to write. And then he would take his little book the next day, when it was time to go to work, and he would tear out one page, and he would fold that page back and place it in his pocket. And as he And finally he got to heaven and stood there at the door of that school. Now here are people talking about them white teachers ain't teaching our children nothing. I want you to know that the first teachers that black folk had were white folks. Taught them something.
Yeah.
Ain't the color of the teacher. All you realize is whether she's black or white, she know more than you know. So you try to get her. So you try to get what they got. He stood there and happened to go. White woman came in and said, "Boy, what do you want?" He said, "Ma'am, I won't be wrong with the school." "How much money do you have?" "I ain't got no money, man." "You came here to go to school and ain't got no money? How do you think you can go to school? You see, I don't have money." "I said, "I just ain't got no money. I came all the way from West Virginia. Come all the way from West Virginia. I want to learn to read and write." He said, "You do? Come here, boy. Take this broom. Take this broom and sweep this broom out of your back. Look for the Washington. Swipe that broom." And he looked, stood off, and he looked at it. He said, "Little dust got on his head." And he took that from and he swept it again. The teacher wasn't back yet. So he said, "I got time, I better sweep it again." And he swept that room and he swept it. Went across to the tube. Nowhere in the room. Little stick of dust. He was satisfied that whether somebody had a college education or not, they got to the school, they wrote, "One day
what you knew.
Yeah.
They had one of these exercises that General Howard spoke. And at the end of it, he said, "What do you want me to tell the folk of the North when I go back up there?" Then the old boy, Richard Wright, stood up and said, "Just tell them we're right."
Yeah.
Richard Wright meant it the same. His Lord, I'm finding. I must.
Yeah.
He'll say that. But he said, "Just tell them that we're right." I want you to know that that same little boy, 11 years old, who had wisdom enough to say, "Just tell them that my reign, all over slaves are not right." On the basis of an education, on the basis of a willingness to serve, went on, finished his Atlanta University, and became the first Negro principal of a high school in Georgia.